Billy Joe Wardlow is infected. They had his way, he'll be dead within a year. Huntsville, Texas. That's
hello?
Western world. A prison staff is preparing to put Wardlow to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFC executes him. We're live coverage of the killing in Texas. The state responsible for half the executions in the U.S. Execution watch host Marlowe Blues. Criminal defense attorney Larry Decker. Dan Huntsman report outside Death House. Linda Huhan Klein. The execution watch for Billy Joe Wardlow begins. Well, a thousand be
none.
Good evening. And welcome to this very special edition of Execution Watch. We're gathered here in our home studios, broadcasting over the airwaves at KPFT 90.1 FM. If you are tuning in for Arab Voices with Saeed, please check back next week, and he'll be here in his regularly scheduled time. We thank him for the courtesy.
Hi, this is Doria. Hi, I'm Rick Campbell. I work at Execution Watch. Can I give you a phone number to call us?
Honoring Billy Joe Ward.
You just got it?
Who's scheduled for execution
as we are now. Great, great. Okay, well, I'll let you go. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Joining us tonight is going to be attorney Larry Douglas, activist Gloria Rubick, and professor at law Dr. Dennis Longmire. Our reporter from the big house, as it were, the death house, is going to be, of course, Linda Huhan. Thank you for joining us tonight. If you have questions about the death penalty, we hope that we can point you into the direction of what's happening here in Texas. You can always check us out at execution.org. Tonight, let me first do a very quick intro with our attorney, our specialist, Larry Douglas. Larry, give us a little lowdown on how we've got Billy to this point.
Well, Marlo, this point is really a long point. This case happened over 20 years ago. Billy Joe was 18 years old when he committed the murder. It was a fairly simple murder, though. The murder of an 82-year-old young man, 82-year-old Carl Cole. What Billy Joe and his girlfriend decided to do was to rob Cole and to steal his truck. And they go to his house to rob him. And they do rob him. But in the course of the robbery, Billy Joe shoots him and kills him. And they take the truck and they go to Nebraska. And they're found the next day in possession of the truck. Billy Joe's arrested. And he is then tried the very next year and found guilty of capital murder. Now, this case is a capital murder because it was a murder committed during the course of committing another felony. In this case, aggravated robbery. The facts of the case are fairly simple, but the element making it capital murder becomes somewhat complicated in that the state, in order to prove capital, used a letter that Billy Joe, really a confession letter, that Billy Joe wrote while he was in jail. And the critical part of that letter, confession, that Billy Joe wrote said the following in terms of how he ended up killing 82-year-old Carl Cole. And what he said, and these are the words that really harmed him, that he said, being younger and stronger, I just pushed him off and shot him right between the eyes just because he pissed me off. He was shot like an executioner would have done it. He fell to the ground lifeless and didn't even wiggle a hair. That's some pretty strong language. Just because he pissed me off, and he fell to the ground lifeless and didn't even wiggle a hair, suggesting that not only did he murder an 82-year-old man, but he did it in something of a savage fashion. Now, by the time Billy Joe gets to trial, though, Billy Joe testifies a little bit differently to make the matter seem a little bit less culpable for a capital murder. See, he told the jury that he did not intend to kill Cole when he went to the house. He's claiming that this was not, to murder him, but simply to rob him. Instead, he and his girlfriend, Tanya Fulford, only intended to rob Cole and steal his truck. When Wardlow brought out the gun, okay, so Wardlow says, look, when I brought out the gun and told Cole to go back inside the house, Cole lunged at Wardlow. So what Wardlow is saying is, this old man came at me, making him sound a whole lot stronger than he was. He said, grabbing my arm and the gun, attempting to push Wardlow away. So he that the victim fought. He also says that Cole was stronger than he expected, so he was caught off balance and began falling backwards. Wardlow says he shot without aiming. So the whole letter saying, I shot in between the eyes. It was like execution style. The testimony that he gave at trial was that it was virtually an accident. I was caught off balance and I was falling backing up. Wardlow said he shot the gun without aiming it, hoping it would get Cole off him. So he's saying, I'm not trying to kill him. I'm just trying to get him off of me. But again, the evidence showed that Cole was shot between the eyes. So and the medical examiner also said that there were some inconsistencies in Wardlow's story. And Wardlow was found guilty of capital murder. And in the punishment phase, which is critical, it was found that Wardlow would be a future danger, although he was 18 years old, and that's what the issue is right now. Although he was only 18 years old at the time, whether an 18-year-old by conduct at 18 can be shown to be a future danger in any respect is at least somewhat troublesome.
All right, Larry, thank you very much for that. We will obviously be going more into depth. I just want to remind our listeners that although we are still hoping for a stay, our executive producer, Elizabeth Stein, is checking on that as we speak.
Hi, Marlo.
We are preparing for the worst. Hello, Gloria.
Hi, Marlo.
This is Gloria Elizabeth. Rubick.
Elizabeth. Hi, sorry about that. Marlo, I did just hear from the Supreme Court, and they sent me copies of all the rulings. They were very short rulings, and they all ruled against Billy Joe Wardlow. They were all rejected with a three-line ruling. So, sorry to say, the execution is slated to go forward.
Larry, did you hear?
I heard that.
Okay. We're going to go quickly to outside of the death house first with Linda Hujan and see what's going there. Is Linda connected? No, Linda? Okay. Let's continue on with what we're doing.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Linda. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So tell us, Linda. I mean, of course, this is they're all very personal. But Danielle Allen is part of our execution watch crew, and we are very, very much watching this. Please tell us what's going on there with you.
Right now, nothing's happening. We haven't seen anybody cross the line yet. We just saw it, you know, heard it from Elizabeth that it was going through. We're still trying to figure out why they haven't started crossing the line.
Do we know who the witnesses are going to be?
I believe it's just Danny and her roommate, Jean.
Do you mind telling our audience a little bit about Danny and Billy Joe?
Well, that is Billy Joe's fiance, and they were going to get married before before he got a date. And then it's like right after he got a date, you have to take a long time to set things up. And he, it never got done until the COVID came through. And so then they stopped all visits and marriages and everything. So her plans were to, as soon as he got to stay, they would be married.
Have you actually spoken to Danny today?
No, I have not seen Danny today.
Tell us about what's going on in this world of COVID out there. Are there a lot of people? Is there anybody?
There's some people. There's like six people from Gloria Rebeck's group. And then I'm the only one from the prison show. And then we've got, you know, the professor here and the monk and the monk that was for Patrick Murphy, said he got to stay because they wouldn't let his Buddhist monk in. He's here with us.
Right.
And then another friend that was down, he was just a reporter or something when Billy Joe got his date, or you know, when he got put in death row. So he's here because he said he's been following this case the whole time.
What does it feel like out there right now?
Well, there's not as many cops as there normally is, so I don't know why, but the guy up at the top, he's carrying his gun around, looking down at us. So I've never seen that before.
That's different, right?
Yes, very different.
Let me see here. So tell us a little bit. I mean, Billy Joe was really well-liked. From what we've understood, is that
he was very well-liked. The guards loved him. The wardens loved him. A lot of them said they would write letters to you know, where they needed to write letters to stop it, but it didn't stop it.
For those of our listeners, especially overseas, it is always add your name into these petitions and to show that you want the death penalty to stop. Longmire is there with you. We'll go with him in just a second, I guess. Linda, will you contact us when they cross?
Yes, I will.
All right. Thank you very much. And is Dennis sharing a line with you, or is he on his own?
Yeah, he's sharing with me.
We can talk to Dennis.
Okay. Okay, Dennis, you're on.
City property.
You're on, Dennis.
We're talking right now with Professor Dennis Longmire, or should I call you Doctor?
Yes. Let me just interrupt you right now, because the witnesses for the execution are going forward across the street right now. And so that's the sign that we received from the coroner, letting us know that the execution is in fact going forward. There's one correctional officer, and it looks like two civilian witnesses who have just walked in, and they will be the witnesses for Billy Wardlow, the witnesses for his victim's family, if there are any, would already have been inside of the Walls unit before 5 o'clock this evening. And so the general signal we get from the coroner, of course, we get no formal communication from the prison system, but when we're on the corner, we know the execution is actively underway when the witnesses cross the street from the administration building into the Walls unit, which just took place.
No, not yet. Danny hasn't come across.
We just heard that it was a rather unusual situation to see
some. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
That there were actually an armed guard was staring down at the few people who are there. Is that normal?
Well, there's a guard in the guard tower, and anytime anytime the prison guards come out of the tower, they are mandated to have their weapon with them. He's standing up there, and he's just relaxing, probably trying to get a little bit of attention to himself. There's a little air conditioning unit in his tower, so he could go in if he wanted to, but it would be highly unlikely that the prison staff would ever open fire on anybody on the corner. There's very little that we could do to put anybody in jeopardy, but hypothetically it's possible. I think the gun that they have is given to them to shoot prisoners who try to escape, not to shoot civilians who try to help them.
Longmire, of course, you are the professor of criminal justice at Sam Houston State University. Can you talk a little bit about the significance of Billy Joe Wardlow's execution here in Texas, the busiest penalty, death penalty state, and where there hasn't been an execution in 5 months?
Well, and I guess the significance of this particular execution is that the state of Texas is willing to go forward and put additional people in jeopardy of contracting the coronavirus. Now, of course, it's by their choice. The family members of the condemned and the family members of the victims, should there be any in there, I don't really know if there are, but those people are voluntarily going in. The staff that come to the corner, the correctional, there's the members of the police force that police the Texas prison system are here, and they're in greater jeopardy of being exposed by having to be here. And so it just is, it's, I'm going to say it, careless, if not negligent. And of course, I'm not a medical doctor, but it's certainly careless of the system to go forward. And candidly, I think Wardlaw's execution is completely unnecessary. He's proven himself to be capable of being maintained under custody as in a relatively peaceful composure. Supposedly, we saved the death penalty for the worst of the worst and the people who can't be contained or constrained against homicidal impulses. And Billy Wardlow has not demonstrated any of those impulses during his term of confinement.
And he's been there a long time, so something's been cracked, right?
Sure, absolutely. He's, you know, and it, actually, any of the guys on death row, any of them, almost have a open invitation to kill because they're already on execution watch. They're already there. But they're generally, they comport themselves fairly peacefully, underscoring the futility of the death penalty. We really don't need to do this. This is not something we need to spend not only fiscal resources, but human resources to support. It just baffles me that we go forward with it. It's a symbolic statement of the state's hard stance on crime, but it's unnecessary.
Well, let me ask you a question. What political motivation could there be for Texas to signal it's ready to resume these executions?
Well, I'm not sure politicians there are in that much in control of themselves, I would say. Politicians like to be in the headlines almost no matter what. And so if there's any controversy around anything that they are involved in, it gets into the news and it gets their name out there. And even if they're getting their name out there is pejorative, it's beneficial to them. And so I don't know. I don't really think that the politicians think about the death penalty as an instrument supporting their platforms, et cetera. It's certainly a symbolic statement that they can stand and claim superior concern for victims of violent crime. Reality is that the best thing that the state of Texas or any state could do to reduce the homicide rate is to install greater medical facilities available in urban centers where most of the serious violent crime takes place, so that the homicides would not be homicides, they would be aggravated assaults. People are dying unnecessarily, not because they have homicidal murderers killing them, but because the cities and the state don't provide sufficient medical services to stop the bleeding of their victims.
Dr. Longmire, how long have you been doing this?
Too long, I think. I'm not really certain, to be honest with you. I don't do time well. I do one day at a time. 35 years or so I've been here. I've been coming to the corner ever since I came to Huntsville, whenever that was. and coming down to the corner for the executions. It's gotten more. I'm sorry. It's gotten more difficult as time goes on because we've started doing them at 6 o'clock, or we do them early evening instead of midnight. When I first came, for most of the time when I was here, the executions were taking place at midnight, or they were scheduled to take place at midnight. Not much else going on, and so it was easy. But now it's a hot, and it's uncomfortable for everybody involved in this process on the streets, not to mention the staff that are in there doing it. So that's the major differences that I feel are really physical differences.
Of course, if you're just joining us now, we are Execution Watch. We are talking with Dr. Dennis Longmire outside of the Death House in Huntsville. We are waiting to hear regarding the execution of Billy Joe Wardlow. Dr. Longmire, does the decision to go ahead with this Wardlow execution make any sense in light of your existing knowledge of our system?
Well, only if you measure the logic as a representation of illogical activity. As I just finished saying, this execution is absolutely unnecessary. The person we are executing has proven himself to be non-dangerous during his entire term of confinement. And so if one of the criteria the jury had to deliberate, and they did, was the likelihood of future danger and violence by this individual, they were wrong. They were dead wrong. But the death is Billy Wardlow's death, not death of another person that he might have come into contact with.
How did you first get involved with studying prisons and gyms?
I'm sorry, you broke up. I didn't hear that.
How did you get involved with basically studying prisons in general and Texas prisons in particular?
Well, okay, here we go. I'm sorry. The victim's witnesses are now walking across the street. The family of the condemned, I mean, not the victims. The family of the condemned are now walking over. That first group I gave you was a false alarm. I didn't realize who they were, but now there are members of their family and their friendship group, network group, and Billy Wardlow's attorney is there. So the witnesses are now crossing. I'm sorry for the earlier error. This again is a part of the confusion of the process. As people come in and out, go in and out of the door, there's no formal communication between the prison and anybody on the streets over here. So we're all guessing and giving our best guesses, but there's no question now that everything is going forward.
We're speaking with Dr. Dennis Longmire. He's just reported, if you are just joining us, that the witnesses for Billy Joe Wardlow have just now crossed over into the Death House. And we assume at this point that the execution will proceed. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct. The language that the prison system would use is that the condemned is now rigged and ready. They've inserted the veins, the catheters into his veins. They have him stabilized. And now the witnesses are being brought in from both the family members of the victims, if there are any, and I don't know that there are, but if there are family members of the victims witnessing, they will be in there in a separate quarter, a separate room than the family members of Billy, who have just walked in. Any of the family members of the victims would have already been in the prison unit before 5 o'clock when I got to this corner. They keep them separated. Those two groups, the family members of the victims and the family members of the condemned, never come into contact with one another. Although when you're in the execution booth, I have witnessed one execution. When you're in the execution booth, you can hear everything that's taking place in the witness chamber beside you. So family members of the condemned can hear family members of the victim and family members of the victim can hear family members of the condemned in that environment. Usually the only, I say usually, the time I was there, the only sounds that were made were sobbing, moaning and crying from both sides of the room, both rooms.
Dr. Lamar, you of course are a professor over at Sam Houston State, which is one of the most well-known schools for law enforcement in the country. Exactly what are some of the facts about the Texas death penalty that your students at Sam Houston State find the most confusing or difficult to comprehend?
Probably the most persistent question that students have is how it is determined which murderers qualify and which murderers do not qualify for the death penalty. And that's the hardest equation to try to answer. Texas has some requirements that have to go into place, but there are so many more homicide perpetrators who qualify just as readily and as fully as Billy Wardlow, that it's hard to explain why one of them gets the death penalty and the other one gets maybe life in prison, maybe 50 years and or less. And it's unclear exactly what it is that determines the difference between those groups. It's not something that is easily measured or easily identified. It's a lot of times I want to think that it's the social class differential between the victim and the perpetrator, or maybe it's the race of the victim versus the race of the perpetrator, or. But none of those possible determinants seems to provide us with a great deal of explanation of the difference. It's almost a coin toss. Certainly, there are some counties that use the death penalty more frequently than other counties, proportionate to the numbers of homicide. And so perhaps one of the major factors is that the counties that tend to execute offenders have a greater budget to use in homicide litigation.
So it's still a money game. And of course, we know that by the time an execution actually happens, millions of dollars have been spent for us to get to this point.
Correct. Absolutely. And millions of dollars would not have been spent to contain Billy Wardlow on isolated one-on-one in-cell confinement for the rest of his natural life. Sometimes I hear people say, well, it costs a lot of money, but think about how much it would cost if this guy was in the prison playing games and, you know, all the misperceptions of how easy prison life is. But it's not that way. The cost of the litigation necessary to bring an inmate from guilt to execution is huge. Those resources could be better spent for victim support services, better spent for, as I said earlier, emergency medical attention being given to homicide victims who are not yet homicide, they're aggravated assault victims. And if they don't die, they don't qualify, their murderer doesn't qualify. And so those kind of differential resources could make a big difference in the lives of people involved in this process. Certainly some people's loved one would still die, but fewer of them would die if there were greater access to high quality medical trauma intervention centers in urban Texas, which is where most of these crimes take place, and certainly in rural Texas as well.
Dr. Longmire, one more question for you that, you know, we're sort of experiencing an awakening here in the United States right now. Do you think that there is a possibility that the justice system might wake up and be a part of a more fair system? Is there any hope that the justice system might go through a reformation at this point in time regarding the penalty?
I have to say, yes, there is hope. I hope that I have this hopeful imagination that tomorrow we're going to wake up and there's going to be an article in the Austin newspaper, and it's going to say, Texas lawmakers rebel against the death penalty. I hope that that will happen one day. Is it likely? No. But I'm hopeful that there will be a time when the death penalty will be a thing of the past for Texas.
We hope so too. Well, going forward, the next scheduled execution here in Texas is September the 9th. If any listeners have something to say about that one way or the other, who should they contact? What should they do?
Is that question directed to me?
Yes, sir.
They should read the paper and make plans to be on the corner of 12th Street and Avenue I in Huntsville on that date. Obviously, this group, I'm not a formal member of any groups, but there's the Texas death penalty abolition movement is here in full force. And so if you're interested in helping to support the cause and the challenge against the death penalty, contact, just Google Texas death penalty abolition movement, and you'll get access to their webpage and find out what things are going on in their local communities. And if there isn't something going on, certainly group members from the community could start going to churches, going to schools, going to community organizations, and trying to enlighten the members of their communities to the problem that we're facing in Texas as executioners.
Well, Dr. Longmire, thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like, you can pass the phone back to Linda.
Linda has disappeared. Oh, I'm sorry. She's sitting in front of me.
I'm here.
Linda, thank you. We're laughing, but we are not happy.
No, we're very unhappy here.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk to Gloria?
But let me ask you a few questions. I mean, Linda Hujan Snyder, to our audience. First of all, you are listening to KPFT. This is 90.1 FM in Houston. This is a very special edition of Execution Watch, where it is the first and only electronic vigil where we are talking about the execution, which is ongoing at this moment, of Billy Joe Wardlow. If you have tuned in for Arab Voices, heard here normally on Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m., thank you for your indulgence. Please check back next week when Saeed and his group will be back on the air. Linda, I mean, for those of you who don't know, Linda is a reporter for Execution Watch. She comes to us from outside of the death house in Huntsville. She watches the comings and goings of witnesses, our only indication of what's happening with the execution. Linda, what are you feeling right now?
Sadness, because I didn't think this was going to happen. I mean, I just knew all day that he was going to get a stay. You know, he deserved a stay. Everybody deserves a stay as far as I'm concerned. But Billy, they should not have done it. You know, he was 18 when he did the crime, and that's too young to be really responsible for what you did.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your activism against the death penalty, and how long have you been involved?
Since 2005, because my husband's brother-in-law was on death row, and that's how I got involved when I met my husband. He told me about his brother-in-law being on death row, and so I started going with him to visit.
Yeah.
But I only visited on the weekends.
And that's when you first became aware of the death penalty here in Texas and
caught up. Yeah, that's really when I knew, after visiting, that the people were just, you know, normal people. They weren't monsters. They were just normal people that made a mistake.
So what is the attitude of friends and relatives who are not activists that you deal with on a regular basis? What do they say?
They think I'm crazy.
Are you crazy, Linda?
No, but they think I am. They just don't understand it at all. And I said, look, what you need to do is go and sit down and visit one of these guys. And, you know, I'll get you on somebody's list, and you can see these are normal people. They're not monsters like people say they are. They're not.
What? How is the contact? We know, of course, that no visitors are allowed right now. There is no visitation. There are no contact visits.
Never any contact visits. Never.
Right. Do you ever tire of coming out for each execution?
No, not really. I'm just usually sad, and it's really hot out here now. But I'm going to stay till the end. I mean, I'm not going to walk away, even though I would love to have a cold shower right now. But I'm going to just stay out here.
So what kind of attitude? I've only had the opportunity to actually go and do interviews twice now, which was a very difficult experience on death row. But what sort of attitudes do you see among prisoners on the road? Do they ever talk to you about the death penalty, or would they rather not talk about it?
No, some of them talk to me. Some of them tell me they believe in execution. Some of them don't believe in execution. They all have different opinions about it. But they admit they did a crime, but they don't think they should have got capital crime. They should have been just charged with, murder, not capital.
In all the visits you've made to death row, and I can't even imagine how many that is, do you ever encounter attitudes or comments that surprise you?
Not really, because I like for them to speak the truth to me, no matter what they say. I mean, a lot of people would probably be just shocked by what they would say, but it really doesn't faze me. I like to listen to them and what they have to say. I did have one guy at one time tell me that he was glad he was being executed because he really still had a desire to kill, and he was executed the next day. But, he told me the truth that he was glad.
You are an active member of the prison show, and I know you get a lot of support through that. Are we still doing our job and spreading information about the prison community, in your opinion?
I think so, yes. Sometimes the guys they don't want to hear their crime. They're so embarrassed about the crime they did, and they really don't want it talked about, but that's just, that's what Execution Watch is about. So that's the only thing I hear, is that the guys say sometimes that they feel like the Execution Watch is cruel to them.
To listen to all the details, right?
Right, to listen to all the details, yeah.
For those who maybe just be joining us for the first time, Execution Watch is actually a product of our producer, our executive producer, Elizabeth Stein, and belated and now deceased Ray Hill, who was very active in all of these, both the prison show. Well, I guess he was one of the main guys, main host of the prison show on KPFT 90.1 FM, which is a very important program to our community. And Execution Watch was his last envisioned show. This was his dream, to stop the death penalty. We're going to be going to another activist in just a minute, if you don't mind, Linda. Let's see if we can get Gloria Rubeck on.
Okay.
For those who are just tuning in, Gloria Rubeck is a member and founder of the Texas Death Penalty Abolition Movement. Gloria, are you there?
Just there. Gloria.
They want to talk to you. You're on. Okay.
You're on. Unmute that button, Gloria. Gloria.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Oh.
Loud and clear, too. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, Gloria, how are you feeling right now?
I'm angry. I'm disgusted. I think this whole death penalty and all these ugly cops that are staring at me can all go to hell. I cannot believe they're going to execute a man that every person who knows him says, well, he wasn't the worst of the worst. He's the best of the best. And yet they're killing him right now. So I'm furious.
You've been looking into one of the more compelling aspects of Billie Joe Wardlow's appeals, we hear. That is his challenge of the state's focus on future dangerousness.
Right.
Larry, jump in here anytime, too, especially for people under 21. Please talk about that.
Well, you know, I didn't know it until I talked to Billie's attorney the other day that Texas is the only state that uses that, that asks a jury to predict the future, like they've got some magic powers. And anybody that has raised children know that they are well into their 20s before they finally get a grip on who they are and their mind is finally developed. So right. It's, and that's just me speaking as a mother and a grandmother and a great-grandmother. But the scientists, the neuroscientists, and I can't even remember the names of the other scientists, have all agreed that someone who does something when they're under 21, or even under 25, actually, that doesn't indicate what they're going to be when they grow up and get it together. So I thought it was so important that there was an amicus, a friend of the court brief filed by a number of these scientists in Billie's case. And I'm so disappointed that this wasn't granted. I think the Supreme Court, first they said they outlawed executions of people with low IQs and that who had the minds of children. And then in 2005, they outlawed the execution of juveniles because they were children if you were under 18. So I thought this was really going to be a step in the right direction. I hope that, I understand there's 45 or something other people on death row who were under 21 when the crime was committed. So I hope this issue will continue to be raised. But boy, Billie just proved them so wrong. I mean, when I read all the articles about his pen pals, his friends, his attorney, talking about what a good person he had become. I mean, this is a guy that would clean the showers because the prison didn't keep him clean enough and he didn't feel like the other guys on death row should have to go into a nasty, dirty shower room. I mean, Lord, that doesn't sound like the worst of the worst. So it's very disappointing the Supreme Court didn't rule correctly on this. I think they will in the future. I wish they'd done it in time to save Billie's life.
Yeah. Gloria, you're very active. I mean, not only were you the founder of the Texas Death Penalty Abolition Movement, I constantly see you recruiting and training new people into the movement, which I'm very grateful for. Do you sense any shift in attitudes towards the death penalty as the country witnesses protests for the social justice? Has it had any effect in your opinion?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I tell you, George Floyd has changed and advanced people's thinking about so many things beyond the police that are wrong with the criminal injustice system. And one of them is the death penalty. And we know that from the cops on the street to the DAs in the court to the judges, these people are not interested in justice. They want another notch in their belt. You know, it was Harris County, and you were talking to Dennis about jurisdictions. Harris County is the death penalty capital of the country. And when I got involved and Johnny Holmes was district attorney, he had what
Johnny
he called,
Holmes.
Pardon me?
Johnny Holmes.
Yeah. He had on his wall what he called his silver needle collection. And every time somebody from Harris County was executed, he'd have their name engraved on a silver needle and put on a plaque. I mean, that's sick. That is so sick. And Johnny Holmes and all of these people aren't interested in justice. They're not interested in solving crimes, period. So, but yeah, we've got a number of new young people in our group, kids that are in college or working, but you know, they're in their late teens, early 20s, and they can't even believe that we're still in the Stone Age as far as executing people. So I thank George Floyd for waking us up to so many of the injustices. And I don't even like to call you.
I thank you for all of the training, your efforts, and your energies that you put towards this, because you are definitely, I know you don't have your bullhorn out there tonight, but we listen to that bullhorn. What's next?
I've got the bullhorn. What can people do? There's a lot people can do. You're welcome to join our Facebook page. Our web page is all messed up, but we're on Facebook as the Texas Death Penalty Abolition Movement. Join our page so you can keep up with the latest stuff. The best, a car with two white dudes just stopped me and wanted to know, why are you saying the death penalty is racist? And I referred them to the Death Penalty Information Center's webpage, which has so much information on it. You know, people should make themselves informed. And people in our group do everything from speaking before churches or at a mosque. We lobby the legislature, but we also raise holy hell when it's appropriate. And I guess you didn't hear me, but I do have my bullhorn with me. And, you know, well,
I do know you're good at raising holy hell.
Yes. So, from saying a prayer to raising hell and everything in between, there's something that everybody can do. There's 58 members of the legislature. I don't know if they were all in the House of Representatives. I'm not sure. Just signed a letter asking the governor to stop this execution, because they're going to be introducing a bill in the next session about under 21 should not be executed. And hopefully by January, when they're supposed to go in session, we can actually have a session, and that will be introduced. And we will be there lobbying for that. We also lobby against the law of parties. There's a number, and I can't remember the number, but there's a number of people on death row who didn't tell anybody, who maybe were sitting out in their car, or like Jeff Wood was when his buddy said he's going to go get a soda. And Jeff heard a shot and walked in this convenience store, and his friend had killed the clerk and pointed the gun at Jeff and said, take down that video camera, I'm going to kill your kids. Well, Jeff is on death row. He thought he was doing the right thing by going to the police and telling them what happened. Well, that was a mistake. He's awaiting execution. But issues like the law of parties and coming forward, hopefully the under 21 issue will be things that we'll be lobbying against. You know, there's an old hanging tree downtown.
Yeah, right in front
It's in front of what used to be, I think, the Albert Thomas Convention Center.
Yeah, across the street from the old, from the Coliseum. It used to be the Coliseum.
Right. And there's actually a historical plaque there that says, how did it word it? Something like, it's been rumored that people were hung from this tree. Well, hell. Everybody knows that and there used to be a courthouse there. Everybody knows that the county courthouse was where they hung people. And they did that in Texas up until 1924. People were hung. Well, I should go back further. People were lynched before we ever even had a legal death penalty. And then, but in 1924, Texas changed the law and said that they were going to centralize executions to Huntsville. So, in September of 1924, five African American men were electrocuted in one night. And I often go visit their graves out at the prison cemetery. One of them's name was George Washington. And I'm sure when his mom named him that, she had high hopes for him. And now he's gone down in history as one of five men that were executed by the state of Texas in the electric chair. So
let me ask you, what happens next here in Huntsville, Gloria?
September.
Well, you know when the execution is over, first of all.
Oh, you know, we'll know when they come back out of the death house. And I've got my eye on that door now. When the witnesses start walking out. But the media went in on time, but his attorney and his fiance and other friends went in very late. And I have a feeling it was just because Danny, his fiance, was having a hard time walking. Hopefully she'll be able to walk out. So I'm just watching the door on the death house. And that's how we'll know when it's over.
We're probably going to have to be going off the air before that. We do have other shows to get to. But I want to thank you and very much. Stay on the line, if you don't mind, or hand it back to Linda, and we'll continue to monitor the situation and take it back to our panel. Gloria, how do people contact you?
Through our Facebook page, The Texas Death Penalty Abolition Movement. They can call me, 713-503-2633. And I'd be happy to talk to them. And if you're a crank call, I'll get you blocked. And I want to say hello to all my friends on death row. And Spider, I don't know if you're getting my mail. I haven't heard from you, but I'm going to keep writing you. So thank you all.
Thank you, Gloria. We've been speaking with Gloria Rubick. She is the founder of The Texas Death Penalty. She gave you some information on how to contact their organization. Facebook is just a great tool for that. If you are interested, please, please contact them. Let's take it back to our panel. Again, we have our attorney, Larry Douglas, here in the room with us. We have our executive producer, Elizabeth Stein. Elizabeth, unmute yourself and let's get you into this action a little bit while we wait to hear if the execution of Billy Joe Wardlow has been completed. Can you tell us, Elizabeth, who is you also were actually reading something from the Death Penalty Center recently, especially regarding COVID and the injustices of the application of the death penalty. What have you been reading lately?
Well, Marl, the Death Penalty Information Center recently released its mid-year report. And to no one's surprise, a lot of the report is about the impact of COVID-19. And what they found is that actually, I think Texas only executed two people so far this year, which has got to be a record for the state that executes more people than any state in the union. Although this execution breaks at what a 5-month hiatus. And it also talked about the imposition of new death penalties. And that seems to have slowed down a little. But, you know, this is all COVID-19 related. But it'll be interesting to see the extended impact of that, because it's having an effect on every aspect of society. When you look at the court systems, the police, the DA, prisons, there's so many things that are being affected. It's almost impossible to predict how that'll all work out. But, you know, we just need to keep an eye on it. And if Texas were a country, I don't know, it would definitely be in the top 10 countries in terms of imposition of the death penalty. And it's a really an unfortunate distinction for our state to have.
It certainly is. Can you tell us a little bit about the next scheduled execution that's coming up in September?
Well, September 9th is going to be the next scheduled execution. And after that, I think there's an execution in the end of September, like September the 30th. And, you know, who knows what impact COVID-19 is going to have on those. So we'll just have to see, you know, as the day gets closer, whether these are even going to take place. It's when there's a stay, it often comes out of the blue. Sometimes a few weeks before, there's been like a technical difficulty with the paperwork, or there's an appeal that has reached the Supreme Court and they issue a stay. So really, we can never predict what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. So we really need to keep our eye on that. I have not seen any new executions put on the calendar. You know, when a death penalty is imposed, that's one thing. And the person is delivered to death row and there's an appeal process. But only when the county has decided that the appeal penalty is up.
The witness is just crossed.
Thank you very much.
Oh, excuse me. They're
coming out now?
Yes, the witnesses just crossed the street.
Linda, please go give her a hug.
I will.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Thank you to our audience. I want to thank our producer, Elizabeth Stein, who's reached out to every prisoner in Texas's death row to do all these things. I want to thank Otis McClay for all of his help, for Bobby Modad, to our engineer, Rick Campbell, Larry Douglas, our attorney. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I didn't get more of you in, but thank you for being there. Thank you for all of your help, as always. To Linda Hujan, our reporter from the Death House, to Dr. Dennis Longmire for his help on today's show. And thank you so much to all of you for listening in to this particular unusual episode of Execution Watch. Join us on executionwatch.org for more information and on Facebook. Mr. McClain, I think we're going to end our show today. Children of God. It's insane. In Jesus' name.